welcome, everybody, post-apocalyptic Lost Nation, to the 15th episode of Facts Are Meaningless. I am Joe.
I'm Eric. Is it really 15? It is, isn't it?
It is 15.
Wow. We have come a long way, baby.
Yes. Do you remember that we used to record these on vinyl?
We did. That's right. Right after we stopped using the stone tablets to send notes to each other back and forth. Mm-hmm. Those were a bitch to take to the post office.
We got to dig out the old Victrola.
Yes, indeed. And get that cute little dog to listen to it on the whatever you call that. What do they call that thing? Is it a megaphone that comes out of those things?
Oh, I don't know. I think that's the Victrola, the RCA Victor.
Yeah, but I mean, doesn't that cone thing have a name?
Cornucopia?
It's not filled with meat and vegetables for the pilgrims.
No. I don't know.
All right. So, yes, Facts Are Meaningless number 15. Wow. What the fuck could we possibly have left to talk about?
We have quite a few things to talk about.
Oh, well, hit me. What's your favorite topic du jour? Wait, well, that's of the day. What's of the week?
I don't know the French word for week.
You've been to France?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, you've been to Italy. That's right.
Italy and the UK.
What's Italian for week?
Settimana.
So it's the du settimana. We'll just mix it all up. Who fucking cares? Yeah. Like anyone understands anything we say anyway. All right.
It's all just noises.
Yeah. All right. So what do you want to talk about?
Well, first I want you to tell me whether you used your restaurant.com certificate.
I did. And it worked like a charm.
Really? Okay.
I was stunned because I handed the gift certificate to the waitress before ordering as per the instructions by my overlords at restaurant.com.
Oh, see, mine didn't say that.
Oh, really? No, mine said to hand it to the person, you know, before ordering. I mean, probably just so that you won't get denied and they won't get in trouble at restaurant.com. But anyway.
Or just so they know right up front that you're getting a discount so they can adjust your meal and service accordingly.
Yeah. Here's your discount. I gave it to her. She looked at it and was like, oh, another one of these. And I actually asked her, like, are you seeing a lot of these? And she said, yeah, we are this week. And I said, so you
Did
guys
she say it like that? Like, oh, another one of these.
No, not quite like that. But you know, she was surprised. They're pretty new to this restaurant that I went to. And I asked her, don't you guys make a deal with restaurant.com for this to work? And they're like, no, we didn't do anything.
So how is that possible?
Restaurant.com is somehow doing this stuff on its own. I really need to like call these guys and like do a story on them for PC Mag because it's an interesting thing that they're providing these kinds of discounts and they must be supplementing us getting some free food by making us look at some advertising or something on their site.
I saw an ad on their site, and if I did, I certainly don't remember. Wait, am I understanding you to say that they did not partner with this restaurant in any way, shape, or form? So basically, if that's the case, then the restaurant – what compels the restaurant to take it?
The restaurant has – there's a phone number on the coupon for the restaurant to call and – get their money back in full from whoever the coupon manufacturer is, restaurant.com in this case.
So it's like the same thing that happens in the grocery store where like they basically get the face value of that to them.
Uh-huh.
Well, that makes even less sense then.
So, yeah, we need to investigate this more. Yeah. Or actually like look them up before we talk and actually read something about them because I don't know. But it worked. It was great. Now, I only saved $10. I didn't do like a huge thing, but there are restaurants in this town where you can drop $100 very easily that you can get pay $20 for a $100 gift certificate on restaurant.com.
Right.
I will be doing that. I promise you.
Yeah. If you do a story on this, you need to let me know. Cause I think the average person doesn't know or give a rat's ass about the economics that underlie it, but it's been killing. I mean, it drives me nuts. I want to know how.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why you want to know either. Are you one of those people? Do you like need to know how the internal combustion engine works before you'll get in a car?
Not to get in a car, but I just, you know, I like to...
Or you let it fester and bug you while you're driving down the road at 80 miles an hour. What is making these wheels turn? Why, when I put my foot on this one in the middle, does it stop?
Someone must explain to me the intricacies of the fuel-air mixture.
See, I don't give a shit about any of that. The fact that I know as much about how my computer works is a miracle. And I still don't understand 90% of the goings on inside
So to plagiarize Patton Oswalt, you don't care about where the shit you like comes from. You just want it.
That's right. Hey, who would plagiarize Patton Oswalt? That's crazy talk.
Okay, I just need to say I followed the link you gave me, and yes. I watched the video of that guy, Corman.
The Corman. And... No, wait. Now let's back up. Patton Oswalt has been plagiarized at least twice in what, the last 2 or 3 months that we know of?
And right. The first time was stand-up guy.
And he caught that guy, and then he caught that guy in a gigantic, sweet set of lies when right. the guy tried to half-assedly defend himself.
But then
we get the valedictorian of Columbia University in his valedictorian speech to the entire graduating class plagiarized a Patton Oswalt bit and did not say it was Patton Oswalt's, though. And he got caught, too, because these dumbasses are getting filmed and put up on YouTube.
Well, this is what I don't understand. I don't understand who thinks that they're going to get away with something like this.
But that's an age-old question of plagiarism. Nobody gets away with this stuff because there's always somebody out there with the same book. I mean, look at the number of people who got nailed for plagiarizing books in the last few years or like bits of books. You know, it's like, do they really think there's absolutely no potential ever for somebody else to have read the book they stole from and their book? Do they really think that the audiences are so separate? Not to mention, in this day and age, half these books are, you know, put into the internet with optical character recognition probably overnight if they're not already digitized beforehand for an ebook, and people are going to do some searches on some things.
But you know what? We're not even talking about books here. We're talking about a comedian plagiarized a comedian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And a guy in a valedictory speech – you know, I mean, like, Patton Oswalt is not some, you know, I mean, he's not like a household name, but he's not exactly a ninth tier comic. You know what I mean? He's like, I don't understand how you would not, even if nobody was videotaping it.
Yeah.
How do you figure that,
well,
you know, 40% of the people you're talking to don't know that that's a Patton Oswalt bit.
Here, I'm going to defend the first guy, comedian who ripped off Patton Oswalt, because he ripped up not only Patton Oswalt, he also ripped off Louis C.K. and a couple other comedians in that same set and got caught. I'm going to defend him by saying the guy has a mental problem, because you don't send an email to Patton Oswalt to defend yourself by filling it with a bunch of other lies about how you were doing this for a friend at a nonprofit thing and you weren't getting paid, all of which was bull. And Patton Oswalt found out by emailing the place that the guy performed at and was told by the person at the theater that it was all bullshit. It's like, duh. I mean, it's just that's a guy with a mental instability who can't stop himself.
See, I don't think that's it. I think
it's like saying, you know, some people just can't stop stealing because they're kleptomaniacs. Other people can't stop stealing because they're poor and hungry. You know, I mean, I think there's a big difference.
But I think the same thing that drives you to think you're going to get away with it drives you to, you know, to BS and pile on after you're caught. Because I just don't understand – you know,
that's,
how
well, that's true, but I mean,
I don't think it's a mental. I think this is very common. I think it happens more often than any of us know, and you know, it just, but just something like so blatant, like,
well,
that.
Well, we've all been there where we got caught in a lie, and so we compounded the lie and just kept building upon it to, you know, try to hopefully bullshit our way out of things. God knows. I mean, if you haven't done that, then you have never spoken aloud.
No, but I mean, this is just.
But yeah, to do it in public or with a public figure who is, see, that's what I don't understand. If you're going to rip someone off, and you're going to lie to them, do it with someone who doesn't have number one, a following. Number two, more wits about them than you will ever hope to have. And number three, a public forum with which they will use said wits to rip you many, many new ones and make you look like the total idiot that you inevitably are. I mean, face it. If you're going to go up against somebody, go up against, like, the schmuck manager at your local, you know, supermarket. What's the worst they're going to do? Say something over your PA system? It'll be fascinating to see if Columbia goes back and looks at his record and try and looks a little harder at his work and whatever his portfolio of work might be and sees if they can find something that will knock him down a few pegs.
Yeah, I doubt they'll bother, but you're right. I mean, if he took something so obvious in such a highly visible venue, then I'm sure he didn't think twice about, you know, grabbing all kinds of shit and tests and papers. And, you know, I'm sure that was not even something he would bat an eyelash at.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be up to Columbia whether they want to, you know, prove that he did okay and that they're okay, if they want to prove that they're going to be more vigilant now, or if they want to prove that their professors are a bunch of fucking lazy hacks who never bothered to check anything against the plagiarism database.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's a question of, you know, does that reflect on them? You know, to what degree it reflects on them?
I'm sure that that's going to be a huge factor in it, you know, just how much it does reflect on them.
Yeah.
And sucks for them.
Yep.
I don't feel bad for them at all.
Nope.
All right, let's talk about the fact that paper money and coins are dirty and disgusting and filled with disease, and that you, of all people, the enemy of dirt, should be against it. And yet, you're all ready to see people do a class action suit against Apple for not wanting to sell iPads with cash. Discuss.
That is your objection to the nation's legal tender, is that it's a harbinger of germs and filth?
What's that ridiculous stat that there's more cocaine in $5 bills, you know, like every time you're touching a $5 bill, you're touching somebody's nose straw. I mean,
yeah, you might be right.
Why are we more worried about the cocaine than the fact that there could be boogers on our $5 bills?
as you probably know, they relented and changed. I don't know if they changed their policy or if they just relented for this woman who wanted to buy the iPad with cash, but
that I'm not sure of.
So they bowed to the outrage, at least publicly.
Yeah, and at least this one woman got to buy an iPad with cash. I guess, you know, but I wanted to point it out though that they were not doing anything illegal.
Correct. Your point is taken. I saw that thing you sent me that they're not required. However, that doesn't change my thesis, because I think that, I mean, it's like the notion that cash, I mean, what's behind the credit card? What's behind the debit card? Cash.
Yes.
So the notion that the genuine article isn't sufficient to buy something it's not illegal, but it just seems kind of perverse.
All right. But
I think part of it is Apple, you know what I mean? Like it's kind of like it feeds into this notion that like these products are just so amazing and, you know, we can't accept cash because they're trying to protect themselves. I guess, what was it, against people exporting the things or something like that? Was that what it was?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they're afraid people are buying too many of them and shipping them overseas. But
and if they want to do that, they can put a dollar amount on it. They can limit you, you know, to how much you can spend in cash, you know, so that you couldn't buy, say, 10 of them or something like that. But just the notion that you couldn't go in and spend your hard-earned cash money.
So, yeah. So, I mean, the other thing Apple could do is, like, actually just offer the damn product worldwide instead of one country at a goddamn time, and then they wouldn't have these issues.
I mean, that's my point. My point is, it's like money's money and cash is cash, and because Apple has their rules that they've set up to serve their own interests, they denied, you know, an ordinary person the right to buy a legitimately buy a product with what nobody disputes is real money.
Yes.
So
you're saying like cash is behind all of the credit, but what's behind the cash? Remember, I mean, it's all
fantasy land.
It's all funny money now, so
right.
It doesn't really matter. I mean, it has worth to us, you know, as a people, but as a global economy, we're like what? How poor are we? We're pretty poor.
Well, back in the old days, all currency was backed by gold.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Not anymore, though.
So yeah, we can't even say that Fort Knox, you know, is worth that much at this point, right? It's not backing our fundamental economy.
Yeah, well, there's definitely more liquid money in circulation than can be accounted for by
exactly
all the gold or all the precious metals. And
so therefore, why don't we just switch over to creds? Wait, which show was that from? Was that a Babylon 5 or is that a Star Trek? Who had creds? Creds.
I don't know.
That was a thing, wasn't it?
You mean like G creds? Credits?
Credits, but they called them creds. What show was that?
I don't know.
God damn it.
On Buck Rogers, they called them credits.
Credits?
Maybe. That site we frequent calls them G creds.
Yeah, no, it's not that. That's going to bug me. I'll have to look it up later.
Quatloos,
yeah. Gold Press Latinum?
Strips, slips, and bars.
See, but that's – I don't even know where I was going with that. Oh,
I'm not,
credit.
No, you're
credit.
Absolutely right. I mean, I realize that we're heading toward a cashless society at some point, although I suspect, like, you know, the paperless society and the death of the floppy disk, it's going to happen way down the road.
Oh, I don't know. If Steve Jobs tries to do away with cash like he did away with the floppy disk, then – you know, maybe we'll get there faster. Maybe Steve Jobs is just trying to get us all to a better place earlier by not taking cash. Did you ever think of that?
Yes. He is my savior as well.
You didn't think of that at all.
No, I did not.
Really? You don't believe any of what you just said? And to be honest, neither do I.
That's right.
But I do hate cash. And I know that if I was on the lam, I would not feel that way, but right now I fucking hate carrying money.
I'm not crazy about it either, and I don't use it that much. I just don't think that, you know, Apple's corporate policies should prevent, you know, the people. Like, I mean, some people don't have credit. They don't have,
true,
you know, debit cards, and I think most of those people don't want iPads or can't afford iPads anyway. But, you know, in a case like, you know, a situation like that, it just offends me that she couldn't spend her money, that you had to come to a, you know, only because of the publicity, just because Apple wants to prevent, say, you know, it's kind of like the DRM argument. You know, it's like you and I pay because of people that, you know, distribute content illegally, and we can't make, you know, use our own content that we paid for legitimately. And mm-hmm. it's kind of like the same thing. It's like it was basically Apple DRMing the iPad so that, you know, somebody couldn't buy one and sell it in the Czech Republic or something like that. And, you know, because of that, this woman, you know, couldn't buy the iPad that she wanted and had the money for. That's kind of like the thing that bothers me.
My God, Steve Jobs has learned how to put digital rights management on money.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, the man's power.
Yep. He is a force to be reckoned with.
Indeed. All right, so tell me why you wanted to talk about the lovely AT&T commercial, which we will have a link to below this audio if you're looking at it at Facts Are Meaningless. And if you're not, then you should go there, factsaremeaningless.com.
Yeah. Well, actually, this kind of ties in a little bit to what we were just talking about with Apple, but I kind of love that commercial.
You do?
And yet I and yet I despise it.
Oh, thank God. Whew. We're back to normal in a lightning snap.
See, on one hand, I love it because who could not love Gene Wilder singing that song?
That's right.
You know, and all the, you know, hand-drawn art and everything. And it's just – it makes you feel good.
What's really good is the idiot people who comment on YouTube, I read some of the comments underneath that video.
Uh-huh.
All right. So it's Gene Wilder singing – Imagination from Willy Wonka the Chocolate Factory, which came out like what, 1973, something like that.
74 or 75.
Right. So these kids who are on YouTube commenting on this thing, probably anywhere from born from like anywhere from 1994 back, if we're lucky.
Were they like pwned?
There was some of that, but no, they're like going on about how great it sounds, And one person was like, you know, that sounds just like the guy who plays Ben Linus. I'm sure that's him singing. Really? That's who you – Michael Emerson's musical debut is for a fucking AT&T commercial. No, definitely not. But, you know, then the closer I listen to it, if I just, like, close my eyes and listen to it, I was like, yeah, Michael Emerson and Gene Wilder in his heyday had some of the same crazy going on.
Yeah.
I could see Gene Wilder playing Ben Linus.
Yep, he's probably in an alternate dimension. He's probably on, in the Dharma Initiative right now.
Yes, I know. That's true. Drinking that generic beer. So anyway, so you like the commercial because it looks cool. It's obviously, like, beautifully.
I like the commercial for the intangibles, for the aesthetics. Like, I like it because it looks cool, it sounds cool, it makes me feel good. But then when I think about it, it enrages me because I mean, think about it. This is AT&T, right?
Yes.
And it's just like, this kind of reminds me of it made me think of the remember the iconic Coke ad about I want to teach the world to sing.
Yes.
Right? And you know that, like, Coke is going to be this catalyst for world peace. It's just fucking soda. You know what I mean? And when it comes to this commercial, this magical, reimagined possible. I mean, I have it on good authority that you can't even make a reliable phone call on AT&T's network, much less do all these magical, whimsical, awesome things like when you were 5 years old. So it's just like it kind of distracts you with the pretty pictures and the pretty sounds, but it's bankrupt beneath that. There's nothing to it. You know,
So if this commercial had been for Verizon Wireless, you'd have been right on. You got a great
network. No, of course not. Because even Verizon's, you know, that guy in the AT&T commercial, they cleverly don't show the phone.
Oh yeah.
You know, but that guy was probably just checking email on his BlackBerry. You know, like, what's magical and whimsical and where's the childlike?
No, but
just
imagine
silly.
Imagine if that commercial had been made in 2000. Remember all those commercials that AT&T did?
Yes.
Saw them. And so Tom Selleck did all those commercials in what, 97 or earlier?
Earlier, I think.
And they're all like, who's going to bring it to you, AT&T? And it's all shit we're doing all the time, like video conferencing.
There was one exception. There was actually a YouTube – there was I thought I had sent it to you. There was a –
probably did, but I don't remember.
A montage of those.
Yeah, but what was the exception? Which one?
Like it was unlocking your door with like equivalent of like what looked like to be an RFID type of thing, which I guess technically might exist, but it's certainly not commonplace.
You can do that, though. I mean,
no, but I mean, like, everything else was fairly standard technology. And
but
that's
standard technology on a car. I do that with my Prius all the time. I don't have to unlock my Prius. I just walk up to it, and it senses I'm coming because I have a smart key, and then the door unlocks.
Yeah, but that's been around for a while.
But that's what I'm saying. That's the same kind of thing they had in that AT&T commercial for the front door of the house, right?
I haven't seen the ad recently, so I may not be recalling this correctly, but it seemed like it was some type of a ID card, like personal to you. I mean, anybody picks up your keys and they get into your car.
Yeah.
But this seemed like it was more of a, oh, it's Eric's home.
Okay.
You know, that smart type of situation. But
yeah.
But see, at least that commercial was there was tangible things. This commercial was just this amorphous kind of nonsense that really had no meaning. And, you know, I appreciate the commercial for, like I said, the aesthetics of it, but it's just like it's kind of disingenuous when you look at it.
But that's what marketing is. Let's piss on marketers for a little bit, whip it out and just fucking yellow them down, because that's what they do. They tell lies for a living. I mean, I like to think of myself as a full-time, you know, or at least a part-time liar, because I write things that I make up. But I hopefully do it in an entertaining way. Don't sell people a bill of goods about crap. That's what marketing is all about.
Right.
No offense to people that we know in marketing and PR and public relations, but you're all liars. So suck it.
Yes, of course. The commercial has yet to be filmed that is completely 100% truthful and not obfuscating in any way.
That's not true.
Okay.
That's a spicy meatball. Tell me that's not true. I don't remember what that's. Oh, Alka-Seltzer.
Right.
You know what? If that was a meatball commercial, I'd say it's not lying. Alka-Seltzer's never worked for me. All right, you're right. 100%. They're all lies.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that commercial was just. I didn't understand where ATT was, where the magic was coming from.
The magic, you know, is coming from the inability to get a 3G signal.
Hand a 5-year-old an AT&T phone, and they're gonna like wail it into the wall. They're not gonna be doing, you know, whimsical, childlike, awesome things with it, you know. So there, I'm done. I've said my piece.
All right, fine. Speaking of monsters, what about monster.com? Lost. I thought you had a job posting or something. We should talk about Lost. So Lost, the greatest achievement in television. No, not really. But it was damn good. Let's face it. Was there any show of the last 6 years that made you fucking jump out of your chair more than Lost and go and exclaim and point at the screen and going, holy fuck?
No. I'm speaking as somebody who didn't even watch the first season. Andrea got me into it starting in season two. But with a couple of exceptions, Lost was the one show that I like really, really was anxious. Like, I couldn't wait to see it. You know what I mean? Like, I would really anticipate it coming on, and when it would go on hiatus, I would be like, you know what I mean? I watched a lot of TV, but this was one of the few shows that I was really.
It was real appointment television. Yeah.
Right.
So you wanted to be there. I mean, it hurt me on the nights that I had to wait to see it, you know, that I couldn't see it in real time, you know, and sometimes I had to go a day or two and like avoid spoilers. I couldn't read the whole internet for like 2 days at a time sometimes. Very difficult. So I can only imagine what it would have been like this week had I not seen it on Sunday and stayed up. But overall, I personally thought the ending was very emotionally satisfying. Plot-wise, I think that the Sideways universe turning out to be basically a way station to heaven, or maybe just a little setup to make Jack feel better by all of his friends. I don't quite know how to buy into that. I mean, I guess you can if you accept that time is not a linear thing in the Lost universe, and so therefore those people all died over the course of the next 100 to 1,000 years, probably in Hurley's case, since he probably should have lived a long time. I don't know. A lot of that is you know, kind of up in the air for me, but it's still on an emotional level. I think it all worked. And there was a fascinating thing that I think you sent to me. Sci-fi.com had a story about how they tricked you into liking the Lost finale.
Oh, right.
Which was fantastic. It was just said, you notice all these people were smiling. There was lots of tears of happiness. It was like, and they brought back lots of characters that you cared about in years previous, you know, where in theory the show was better than it is now, therefore making you feel like you were at a happy family reunion where you were just going to leave with a big smile on your face no matter what. And in many ways, I'm going to say, yes, that's true, so what? It worked. Because they didn't leave me with any gigantic holes like, I don't know, a character who came back from the dead for no good reason and therefore was never explained, even though she had a huge part to play in solving all of the dilemmas. And you know who I'm talking about.
Wait, say that again?
I'm talking about Starbuck.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Lost.
I was, but what I'm referencing is the fact
that the end of Battlestar Galactica
had gaping holes in it that were a problem for me in retrospect. I was happy at the end of Battlestar Galactica too, but now when I think back on it, I am dissatisfied. Maybe I'll feel that way in a few weeks about Lost, but right now, still, I don't know. I'm feeling okay with it. Now, I did talk to a friend of mine, Corinne, and she and I discussed it, and she said she was kind of meh about the whole ending because she said the one thing she would have liked is that, well, what she got was what she expected. And that was the one thing about Lost that was always great, was delivering what we didn't expect, you know, complete out of left field, like, whoa, what the fuck? And that we did not get in the ending. They gave exactly what they promised. And, I mean, to that extent, I'm okay with it. But also, I can see her point that it can be a little disappointing after so many years of surprises. Maybe you wanted a little bit more out of it.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, when I first finished watching, I was definitely not satisfied.
Really?
Yeah. And I wasn't as bad as, like, I think I saw Naomi's Facebook posting. Do you recall that?
Yeah. Our friend Naomi Greatchase, like, called it, like, a travesty against storytelling or something like that.
Right. Like, I want my 6 years back. I wasn't quite that bad, but I was, you know, I was still trying. You know, as the episode ended, my eyes welled up. And at first I thought it was tears, but it turned out to be blood from all the brain hemorrhaging that was going on as I was trying to process what I had just seen.
All I could picture is like pollen, you know, just gathering in the corner of your eyes. I don't know. That's all I got. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot to think about, but, you know, they explained so much of it away by just, you know, having the Sideways universe become essentially heaven or a way station to heaven for no good reason. But, I mean, it's still obviously there. Ben Linus got to go off and continue to play dad to his late daughter, and he gets to start shagging the French woman.
Right. So, actually, I mean, probably the one thing that I would say I didn't like about it is I was kind of hoping that Flash Sideways was actually an alternate timeline where they would all wind up and everybody was, like, you know, fixed and living happy, you know, and that it turns out to be purgatory or whatever you want to call
but,
it.
Yeah, it's like purgatory. It's, purgatory would be a negative thing. This is not a purgatory. I mean, this is, I don't know. What's the positive version of purgatory? I don't know. But, I mean, I wouldn't call what they were in purgatory necessarily.
But, I mean, is it like reality? That's probably
– It's an alternate reality. Just, you know, like – I mean, in theory, if there's a multiverse, there's a billion versions of any of that could have happened where the bomb went off or the bomb didn't go off and they could have been passing through multiverses. I mean, let's not even get into that because that's a whole –
So you're saying it's like a Schrodinger's cat thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, okay. It can go on forever and ever. But, you know, anybody who reads comic books knows about multiverses. That's like just – it's like par for the course. You learn that at age 5 and, you know, the minute you sit down and read a DC comic, you have to know about multiverses because there's 10 different versions of Batman from the last 80 years to deal with.
Right.
So – you know,
even George Clooney.
Sadly, in some theories, all versions of Batman exist. You know, across multiverses, and therefore they are all valid. He said with dick fingers, and that includes Adam West and George Clooney. Sad to say. So anyway, Lost still goes down in history as great a show that actually had an ending that they planned ahead. Did you notice? I didn't even know this. A friend of mine told me today, in the opening episode of this season, when they found Juliet in the well after the bomb had gone off on the island, and they pulled her out, and she died in Sawyer's arms, she said to Sawyer, "Let's get coffee sometime." And then she said, you know, it worked, talking about the bomb in some way. So even at that point, you know, she was dying or had died or whatever and was still part of – was moving into that Sideways verse in some way, you know, again, proving time had no issue there because the Sideways verse was 2004 and the current verse, you know, 2010, et cetera, or 2008. I don't know how that was being measured anymore. It might have been
2007.
Yeah. So there you have it. They at least planned it ahead of time. Whether you like it or not. I mean, look at it. That show was about faith versus science and was always about questions as much as it was about answers. If you wanted nothing but answers, then, dude, you were watching the wrong show.
Right.
You know, it just wasn't going to happen. And, I mean, we got a lot more answers than I thought we would. The question is, are you ever going to be satisfied with answers? When the mysteries are that cool, are the answers ever going to be good enough?
It's not like you know, they could have they had the ending plan, but they didn't have it planned in 2004. So it's not like they could have closed every, you know, hole and tied off every end that they developed because they didn't know, you know, they started.
No, they
I mean, I didn't expect them to answer every single question, you know, like, or even every single big thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
no, there's no way they could, because like they had things like they couldn't anticipate Walt was going to turn into a 17-foot tall teenager in like a week. You know?
Oh, sure they could.
Well, they could
have. Deep Space Nine? Remember Jake's ago?
Yeah, but they had, but they were telling stories in real time with the show. Right. You know, there's a big difference when you're trying to tell something that takes place in 3 months over 3 years.
Right.
So there was that. They couldn't deal with the fact that, you know, Mr. Echo would turn out to be a dick and didn't want to work with them, and they didn't want to work with him. And so, you know, I mean, I'm sure he'd still have been around. He was a very popular character.
Right.
But, you know, working with that actor was too much. I mean, they probably didn't anticipate that Anna Lucia would be so hated by everybody, you know, things like that. Or, you know, that Shannon would be hated or whatever. I mean,
what happened to Nikki and Paolo?
Nikki and Paolo. See, that's one of the things where I think they didn't anticipate it. And then when they realized they were hated, they just ran with it. Like, let's kill them off in the most spectacular, funny way we possibly can.
Right.
God bless them. Poor Nikki and Paolo. And hey, Nikki and Paolo's diamonds. I think Miles still had the diamonds on him when he got on the plane with Lapidus and Richard Alpert.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I didn't notice that.
He dug them up. So Miles went back to become a very, very rich man who talks to the dead. And really, you know what? Ultimately, it all boils down to, for me, Frank Lapidus lived, and I'm happy.
Right.
That fucking guy got the shaft more than just about anybody else. He was just,
as soon as I saw him, I thought of you.
Yeah. He was just along for the ride every single time. He goes, like, crashes a helicopter. All he wants to do is fly to Guam, and then he gets stuck back there again. I mean, terrible, terrible couple of weeks for Frank Lapidus. Good for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I shall miss the show.
I'm going to miss it, too. I don't really know what will take its place. I guess I'm going to have to start watching Fringe.
See, now, I mean, not coincidentally, since they're both J.J. Abrams, but then again, actually, let me ask you a question pursuant to that. So J.J. Abrams got the series going.
Yes.
But, I mean, it was Lindelof and Cuse pretty much from then on. I mean, it wasn't like J.J. Abrams was driving the plot.
No, J.J. Abrams was off. He was directing like a he directed the pilot, I think. Then I think he was off doing Mission Impossible 3, and after that, Star Trek.
Right.
And doing Cloverfield stuff in between them.
Right. Because, I mean, Fringe is, you know, another one of his shows, quote-unquote,
yeah.
But it's run by two other guys.
And those guys are writing Star Trek 2 for him because they wrote the first Star Trek. J.J. Abrams is directing a Spielberg-produced thing right now. There was a trailer for it on the head of Iron Man.
Oh, okay.
Something that takes place around Roswell, New Mexico in the 1950s, I believe. Hmm. The trailer is nothing but some closed captions over a train wreck footage. It's probably on YouTube. We'll link to that too. But yeah, he's the kind of guy, he's kind of like James L. Brooks. Comes in, shows people what to do, how to make it look good, and then he goes on his merry way. You know? Kind of like when Kevin Smith directed the pilot for Reaper, and then he had nothing else to do with the show, you know, after that. I think that happens a lot.
Well, Fringe is definitely the closest thing to Lost out there at the moment, I would say, that, you know, that I'm aware of.
All right.
So,
well, I have downloaded the whole second season, and I'm going to DVD on Netflix the first season pretty soon. And there we go. Another thing to get obsessed with, because I heard it's good. So I hate to be left behind by some geekery.
That's right.
That would suck.
Gotta participate in that shit.
That's right. I'm all about participation.
All right, everybody. That's another episode. We're about to take our leave.
We are. This will be our 15th and not our final episode. We'll do it again. When we do it again, afterward, I will live in a new place. I will be recording in my...
You don't mean like an alternate universe, do you?
That's exactly what I mean. I plan to go to purgatory.
Okay.
And I'm going
to... Can you forward your mail there?
I hope to get – I want my purgatory to have no mail, no email, none of that. Just texting. I'm okay with that.
And sexting.
I like that. Texting and sexting. Yeah, new place. New place to record from. I'm even thinking about getting some of that foam eggshell stuff to put on the wall behind me so I'll look like I'm in a real sound studio.
Ooh. And, will you keep your headphone on one ear going like this?
Yeah, I will do that. I'll look like a – I don't know. What does that even look like? Is that something?
I don't know. I don't know what you call that.
It's a thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever that was. Yeah, and I'll
articulate.
Yep. I got. You know what I want to get? I want to find an on the air sign.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be cool? I want one. Yeah. I want one with a remote, so like I can turn it on while I'm sitting at my desk and have the light come on elsewhere. That's what I want.
Probably isn't that hard to find.
I did a quick search on Google Shopping and I found nothing of the sort. But I figure, you know what? Maybe I can make one. There's got to
be make it with a light bright.
Oh, there you go. That's good. Actually, what are they? You know that easy button that they sell at Staples? Don't they have little ones like that that are a light? Couldn't I just get like something that says on the air and put over one of those?
Oh, I don't know.
That would work, right? I don't know. I won't find one with the remote activation though. That I'm not sure how to do. There's got to be a wireless thing you could do, like a front porch light, maybe.
You could take like a digital clock that lights up, put your on the air over it, plug it in, and then like control it with Zigbee or something like that.
Zigbee. Oh God, yes. Let's introduce another wireless thing into my friggin' life. That's what I need. Then I can control it through my iPhone. You know what I'll do? I'm just gonna like put the iPhone flashlight app on, and I'm just gonna put like a red gel over it that says on the air, and I'm just gonna put it on the floor outside of the office. See how that works. Think that'll do it?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. That works. All right. That's it, folks. We're done. Talk to you next week. Adios.